Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
I was reading a statistic recently about how atheists are so much more likely to embrace vaccinations for COVID. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm excited about life, at least to a degree, resuming. Because there's a lot of free thought events coming up in 2022. They've had years of cancellations for all these events, but they're going to be conferences with vaccination requirements, etc. But coming up on March 4th, 5th, and 6th, I'll be in Orlando, Florida, for the Florida Free Thought Conference. I'm the keynote on Sunday, but it's going to be a great weekend. The Iowa State University Atheists and Agnostics Society and the ISU Lectures Program has invited me to speak at the college. That's coming up on March the 9th. Easter weekend, the American Atheists National Convention is going to happen. And there's some other stuff coming up later on in the year. I have listed everything with links and details and all the stuff you need. TheThinkingAtheist.com/events. But just make a note. Orlando, Florida, Ames, Iowa, Atlanta, Georgia, all on the horizon, coming up very quickly. Bring your vaccinated self and get ready for a good time, okay? You ever been stuck on a group text? I'm not a fan of group texts. I understand their necessity and utility. I'm on a family group text, okay? Evangelical family. And I'm the black sheep. You know, I'm the broken branch, I'm the heathen, but I still get included because there's stuff that everybody needs to know, and that's fine. Somebody needs to run an errand. Somebody please drop this by mom's house because she needs it. Here's a special event everybody should know about. Here's a concern. Okay, fine. I don't ever really respond unless I absolutely have to. Mostly I leave the phone sitting on the desk and just watch the thing going, all freaking day, because you can't just post something. Everybody on the thread has to respond with a thumbs up or happy face or praise the Lord. Jesus, 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 Jesus. There's a lot of Jesus going on the thread right now. So I got my phone sitting on the desk. I'm just waiting for the next buzz. We got somebody in the family. They become part of our family, moved here from Ukraine. Recently went home to visit their parents, and of course, the shit hit the fan with Russia. We're on the brink of war over there, you know. And she's stuck. She can't get out of the country right now for a number of reasons. So that notification comes in. Everybody needs to pray, praying to Jesus, praying that she will be able to navigate and get on the plane and get home. I get the concern, okay? Everybody else comes back praying. God is good. God will open the door. God will help the plane to lift off and do whatever planes do. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And I say nothing, right? In my mind, if Jesus wanted her home, he would just miracle her ass home. All right, so there's probably no Jesus. And if there is one, he apparently is busy making rainbows and finding parking spaces for people. He's out doing something else. Okay, we're on the brink of war. Jesus needs to get this girl home, but, you know, he's got other shit to do. Somebody in the family goes to the hospital. She's got a health crisis. Please, everybody, prayer warriors, we need you to everybody to pray, pray, gonna pray, power of prayer, Jesus, 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 Jesus. And everybody responds. Praying hands emojis. I've seen a shit ton of those. I didn't even know those existed. Praying hands emojis. Praying God is good. God heals. God is our savior and solution. We claim their divine healing. They are at the hospital. They're at the hospital. They didn't drive her to a church. They didn't leave her in the living room and surround her with the healing power of prayer and enjoyed hands and claim God's divine miracle. They got in the car. They drove to the hospital, and they are under the care of trained physicians. I have almost responded. I don't know how many times I've almost picked up the phone and said, if prayer worked, there would be no hospital. I don't know why it bothers me as much as it does. It's not an impact on my life. It's their thing. But, you know, I come back to that Hitchens quote, never be a spectator to unfairness or stupidity. The grave will provide plenty of time for silence. And it kind of falls under that second category for me. This is just stupidity. Because they're navigating in a cause and effect world as if there is no God. So it's lip service, right? Jesus, 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 as they are working logistically to physically fix the problem, God-free, right? So God is just sort of the window dressing on a whole other scenario that has nothing to do with God. And I just don't get it. And I, you know, then I think about myself 15 years ago, and I guess I was guilty of saying and doing the same thing. It's an interesting social experiment to watch people essentially live secular lives. They live as if there is no God as they continue to talk nonstop about God. I write about this in my upcoming book. Been watching this migration out of Pathos. If you don't know what Pathos is, it's like a blog hub. It's a site where, you know, friendly atheists and a bunch of other columnists and bloggers are always posting. And there's been this migration out of Pathos because apparently that site has decided that, yeah, you can write about religion and you can be mildly critical, we suppose, but we sure don't want anything too hardcore. You know, we don't want you to really tackle. We don't want you to go after the red meat of religion because we want to be really, really inclusive. So essentially, they've hamstrung all of these atheist and secular and even humanist authors and activists and bloggers telling them, write about religion, but be very, very careful not to offend the religious. And they're like, what the hell? And many of them have migrated, and I've been trying to get the word out. They moved to a whole other hub, which is actually much more diverse. It's better laid out, and I just think it's a better option. It's called Only Sky. This is not a commercial for them. This is just a heads up that you should bookmark it. It's onlysky.media. Now they can write and produce and podcast whatever they want, whenever they want, while Pathos is wrapping itself in bubble wrap. We sure don't want to make those religious people uncomfortable. What? Why in the world would you coddle a superstition? I feel the same way about Islam. If people say you go after Islam, you are Islamophobic. I'm sorry, Islam is an idea. Ideas are fair game. And everybody's walking on freaking eggshells is part of the problem. Why are we deferring to religions? I saw somebody else post something about how tired they are, and I agree, of people who have the word reverend or pastor or bishop or whatever in front of their name. People who have that title are automatically afforded an extra measure of respect and moral authority. Oh, you know, he's a reverend. This happened to me the other day. I was on the tennis court. One of the guys is a retired pastor, and you should see the way they treat him. Like, royalty in some ways. Like, he spent 35 years behind the pulpit doing God's good work. So even though he's a great guy, he was afforded an extra measure of credibility because he had the word reverend before his name for three decades. I just don't get that. I mean, how often has our culture just decided religious equals good or religious equals protected? Religion being an idea, not the people, not discriminating against our fellow human beings, right? Going back to the difference between criticizing Islam and anti-Muslim bigotry, those are two totally different things. And this idea that Patheos just decided, anyway, I'm done bitching about it. OnlySky.media, that's where everybody has gone. And it's really a pretty impressive place. I would check that out if I were you. I guess I've vented enough. The broadcast today populated almost entirely with your phone calls, your comments, questions, opinions, perspectives, and whatever. Cameron, thanks for calling, my friend. Are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you, Seth. I'm calling to ask you for a bit of advice. It's about my father. Now, you know the type, right? These really Trumpist folks who, well, I'm not necessarily religious, still follow Trump with the fanatical devotion of a cult leader.
Your dad doesn't necessarily then see him as an appointment of God, a savior by proxy.
Yes, but very fanatically. I've tried arguing with him. My grandfather has tried arguing with him, but he just won't listen. I don't know what to do. I want to try to get him out of this.
Well, I understand, but I don't think you should bear the responsibility of deprogramming someone else. It's like if you look at someone who is an alcoholic and you say, I wish I could get them out of this cycle of addiction and rescue them from the damage that the overuse of alcohol has done in their life. I think we've all felt something like that when we see a person who is in a bad way. But the agency in that regard belongs to them. We can suggest, we can support, we can express concern. But it's not on you to change your dad. And I think you need to release yourself of that responsibility and in some ways perhaps even grieve the fact that it may not happen. Somebody that dogmatic, somebody who's that much of a closed system. I never write anybody totally off, but I think you're putting too much pressure on yourself.
Fair enough. I've always had a difficulty doing that. I want to save people. I want to help people. I want to help everyone.
Have you noticed that in the engagement, the argument is a better word, that the reverse result seems to be happening instead of pulling them toward perhaps a more reasonable idea? You see a doubling down, a reinforcing. It's more like, I doubly think this. That's going on, right?
Yeah, it is. And my grandfather, he says, just don't argue with him whatsoever. Nothing's going to happen. If anything, it'll just get worse. So
I agree with your grandfather. I think having a shout fest or, you know, directly going in and saying you're wrong, given his mindset, is not going to produce the result you want and may even make things harder. If you do engage, I think you keep your voice low. I think you keep the conversations relatively short. I think you remain as pleasant as you can be and you use a lot of questions. The Socratic method is really the only thing I have been able to do. It still becomes frustrating for the other person, but it shifts the burden of proof to them. So if he's making specific claims about who Trump is, where he came from, what his claims are, what he has done or not done, you know, stolen election or hydrochloroquine or whatever else it is, I think if you can ask a question in good faith about that, instead of saying, God, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, then it shifts a burden of proof. They are then explaining, but they don't feel quite as attacked as before. So anyway, I mean, that's all I got, but I wouldn't carry that mantle, man. You know, it sounds to me like you are assuming responsibility for his attitude, opinion, decision-making, personality, and you just can't do that, okay?
Yeah. I also got one other thing, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Always seems to me as if these Trump sort of people have sort of black and white absolute just a mindset, like it's always X and never Y. Is that a sort of defense mechanism or recovery mechanism? I don't really understand it. I'm always open to a new idea.
I think if we're going to be fair, this is not just a Trump thing. It's not just a conservative thing. I have found binary thinkers among my fellow liberals. I found them in almost every, if not every, political camp, religious camp, non-religious camp. We're talking about a human challenge. And it's funny you should bring this up. I do talk about this a little bit in my book, Christianity Made Me Talk Like an Idiot. Also, a podcast conversation called Impossible Conversations with a couple of psychologists. And we get into the challenge of binary thinking, black, white, all, nothing thinking, which affects the entire human condition. I would highly recommend that you peruse that hour-long discussion. I think it will benefit you. Anyway, ultimately, though, that what I want you to take away from all this is take some of the pressure off yourself, okay?
I'll also try doing that with a lot of my other issues, because that seems to be a problem with me, as I always try to take everything on myself, and I probably should do that.
All right, my friend. Best wishes. Thank you. See you later.
Thank you, Seth.
Jacob, thank you so much for calling. Are you with me?
Yes, Seth, I'm with you. How are you?
I got two people speaking with overtly biblical names, Seth and Jacob, rendezvous on an atheist podcast. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, first of all, thank you. My family is super religious, so, you know, they named everybody from the Bible.
Yeah.
It's really annoying.
Yeah.
What I'm tired of is people thanking God for everything or praising God. I got in trouble at work because I made fun of somebody for praising God.
Okay, hang on. You made fun of someone because they were praising God at the office. Help me understand what you're talking about here. Can you flesh out the scenario?
Yes. I work at a civic center, events and things. We hold concerts and everything. Well, the last event I had, it was a basketball game. Some of the basketball players got hurt, and the ambulance came, and apparently they were okay, according to the EMTs, and people just started to thank God and, you know, praise God this, they're all fine and everything. Well, I started to hail Satan. You know, praise Satan, they're fine, you know, hail Satan. I'd do that to piss off the religious people. I'm an atheist. So I got written up for praising Satan.
Well, what's your end goal? I mean, you said you wanted to piss off. I mean, why do it?
Religion pisses me off. Now, when I was younger, I was forced into conversion camp, the camps they would send gay people to try to turn them straight and everything. It was a horrible experience to me, so it kind of hurt me. That's one reason why I became an atheist.
Your anger is understandable. So the reason you scream Hail Satan is just to poke at the religious people. You're not expecting to really accomplish anything as far as what they're doing. You're doing it because it feels good to you.
It feels good to me. I mean, the looks on their face are kind of funny to me sometimes. You know, if you do something evil, they all blame Satan and stuff. So I had surgery a couple months ago too, appendix removed. And my family thanked God that I was okay coming out of it and everything. And it's like, you know, God had nothing to do with it. It was a surgical team and everything. I'm just getting tired of people thanking God for things that people do.
Well, I can't tell you how to express your anger or to vent or what your therapy looks like. I can't see any result other than the frothing, huffing indignation that I'm sure you received. I'm not convinced it helps us if we're in the business of changing minds, but if your end goal is just to kind of let them have it, you certainly did accomplish that. Only you can decide if that's the kind of attention that you wanted or that might be in some way productive. I'm a little dubious about the second half, but as far as your expression, that's yours, okay?
Okay, thank you, Seth.
All right, take care. See you. 504, I've got Lynn. Are you with me?
Yes, Liam, actually.
Liam, I'm sorry about that. Liam, you are on the air. Do you have a comment or question for the broadcast today?
Well, a question maybe to get some advice from you, but at the risk of this turning into an all-venting sort of call-in show for the day, I kind of have beef with something I've recently run across in my city. I live in New Orleans. Are you familiar with the Catholic tradition of the Red Mass?
No, what's the Red Mass?
Oh, boy, there's a whole rabbit hole here. and I apologize in advance of it. I just start kind of ranting about this. I got this pulled up so I don't misquote it. This is a Facebook account of the incoming mayor. The City of New Orleans and Inaugural Committee invite you to join the inaugural events for Mayor Cantrell, first event on the schedule, the official schedule, inaugural mass. So tied into the inauguration is a Catholic mass.
Welcome to Louisiana. What's a red mass?
Well, according to Wikipedia, it's an old tradition to where you can have a mass to celebrate anything or commemorate anything. So it's a mass set aside in celebration of all the people who serve as judges, lawyers, professors, and government officials. There's also a blue mass. I haven't looked into that much, but it's more of like people who serve on the law enforcement. So it's kind of weird to do that, but the beef I have is that by using state equipment, official city accounts to promote this specific religious service, they're compelling me to contribute to the promotion of this religious event by using my taxpayer money. Am I in the wrong here?
Oh, of course not. No, absolutely not. It sounds like something that the litigators at Freedom From Religion Foundation need to know about, because often they will be able to send sort of a cease and desist. We have real concerns to make a public noise about it. And, you know, usually these resolve out of court, but occasionally I think they do take the full lawsuit, you know, and the point is valid. Our public institutions, our tax dollars, are not here to support a theocracy. We are a representative government, non-religion, other religions, surviving and thriving here in the States. And so this idea they've co-opted the inauguration for a Catholic ritual is totally inappropriate. It needs to be called out and brought to light. I'd encourage you to click on a link that says something like report a violation. Something like that. You can go to ffrf.org and, you know, maybe they'll make some noise about it, okay?
I will. Thanks for the advice.
Liam, you are much appreciated. Take care of yourself.
Okay, same to you.
All right, bye. See you. Connor, thanks for calling, my friend. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Couple things. The main one I wanted to talk about is Oklahoma may be passing a new law in the Senate. It basically says, okay, so you know how Oklahoma has in their public schools, they have religious classes that you could opt into, you know, electives and all that. Well, not only are they forcing the Christian religion on people in these classes, but they're now going to be forcing a specific translation on these people.
Let me give everybody some context. This is my home state. Senator George Burns, and yes, his name is George Burns. He filed a Senate bill, Bill 1161, that would ensure the King James Bible is used for elective courses on Hebrew scriptures and the New Testament, and would make sure that the KJV is available in all school libraries. And here's his public statement, quote, "Our founding fathers relied heavily upon the scriptures in the formation of our country, and the Bible they used was the King James Bible, which makes it an important historical document. It influenced the writing of the major documents that created this country, including the Constitution. It's historically accurate to use that version, and it is in the public domain, which is also important. Welcome to Oklahoma."
Yeah, I mean, I could get the public domain part. I kind of have a few issues with copyright law, but let's not get into that. And second of all, weren't most of the founding fathers deists?
I think they ran the gamut. A great many were deists. A huge number of them were religious critics. You know, Franklin was mocking the Puritans. Jefferson was at best a deist. Thomas Paine wrote The Age of Reason, hugely critical of organized religion. John Adams, who signed the Treaty of Tripoli that declared outright that we are in no way a Christian nation, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what the hell Senator George Burns is talking about, but it's definitely an alternate history.
I mean, I find it hilarious that people still believe this. Anyways, my real issue with this, to me, is kind of an all or nothing kind of thing. Sure, you can teach the Bible in schools, but what's to prevent people from teaching, like, the Quran or Dianetics in schools? Either all of it's okay or none of it's okay.
By reading the article, I can't tell whether or not these elective courses are like a theology course, like going to a Christian college kind of course, or whether it's just here's the Bible and here's the faith it's based on, almost like you would teach a world religions course, a comparative religions course. I suspect in this state it's going to be preaching instead of teaching. But that's the bill, and I understand your frustration. Connor, thanks for bringing it to our attention on the show.
You're welcome.
Here's a related story. You know, Josh Mandel is out of Ohio. He's running for Senate. And this just recently, he publicly stated that there is no church-state separation. And the Constitution is a Christian document. I'm totally serious. Here's the audio clip.
I do not believe in separation of church and state. There is no such thing. The founders of this country, the founding fathers, they did not believe in separation of church and state. When you read the United States Constitution, nowhere in the United States Constitution do you read about separation of church and state. It does not exist.
And that was posted on his own Twitter page on January the 28th. I mean, he just playing his cards up front. What color is the sky in his world? I'm not convinced that he is that historically illiterate. I mean, who really knows what his motivation is, but I can't help but think he's just a revisionist because it suits him. It's about Christian privilege and power. I just can't help but think this guy is maneuvering. He's probably genuinely a Christian, but he's not interested in representing the beliefs or lack of beliefs of the founding fathers. If that doesn't serve his purpose, he's happy to rewrite the record. I've got Paul at 832. Are you with me?
Hey, Seth. How are you?
Another biblical name. Love it. What's going on? What's on your mind today?
Yeah, born to atheist parents, so figure that out.
Awesome.
We've talked a few times now. I'm Paul in Houston. You might recall that my wife is from a Christian family, and she's not a devout fundamental Christian herself. She was never was a big part of our marriage, and otherwise I don't think she would have married me. But she comes from a pretty devout family, and we just learned today that her mother has cancer. We don't yet know. All we know is there's a mass in one organ. It's actually an organ you can live without. So if that's the end of it, that's in the realm of cancer. I mean, it's not Christopher Hitchens stage 4 esophageal cancer, right? So it's certainly not the worst news, but it is concerning, and we'll learn more next week about malignancy and all that. I guess I'm just thinking ahead of the rhetoric that's going to be in the family. And I'm going to be as supportive as I can because I really do care about her parents. But I'm just looking for, I guess, advice from you on how to handle a situation where the family is going to be wrapped in religious context and prayer and that kind of support and reaching out to God. If this ever came to something much more significant, I'm thinking ahead, like it's going to be a tough situation for me to navigate between my thoughts and beliefs and what I care about versus what the family needs. And I certainly wouldn't want to do anything that belittles the situation or makes it hard for anyone else. That's not my goal. I just want to try to do the right thing. You know what I mean?
Well, I heard that line. I like to recite, someone else's tragedy is not my soapbox. I think if their prayers and platitudes aren't preventing science-based medical intervention, I would just leave it. It's almost like me in this text thread. I know people are seeing doctors and taking medicines the whole time. They're talking about praying prayers, sending out prayers, pray. But as long as I know that they're not endangering perhaps their kids or something like that, I mean, I usually bite my tongue. You're not going to change their minds. I've got a chapter in my new book about prayer, research on the efficacy of prayer. Does it work even when it doesn't work? And there's this idea that if people pray, there's a balming effect, a calming effect, a meditative effect. It relaxes people, gives them perhaps a more positive mindset. If that's the case, even if we know there's no supernatural aspect to prayer, does a sort of meditative calming, even placebo effect, provide some benefit? It might. If it calms them down, makes them happy, helps to alleviate some of the stress, I'm not opposed to it. But it was interesting because there was a study done on heart surgery patients. And three groups were selected. And there was a group that was prayed for and told, a group prayed for but not told, or they said, you may or may not get prayed for. And then there was a group that outright wasn't prayed for. And we noticed that the group that was prayed for and actually knew, were told they were being prayed for, experienced a slight decrease in recovery. And we have to ask ourselves, did they feel extra pressure? Like, if I don't get better, I've failed in my faith, or I've failed all the prayer warriors. Not only were the results almost even, like almost the same across the board, but those people who were prayed for and knew about it actually fared a little bit worse. So I'm not totally convinced that, calling down the spirits is effective. But you can't control what they do or what they think. I think as long as it's not direct endangerment. If it was me, I mean, I can't tell you what to do. If it was me, I'd just bite my tongue. They know my position anyway.
I don't think they know my position. Actually, I'm very confident they don't know my position, because I've made a lot of effort in trying to keep that out of the conversation for my wife's benefit, really, and her relationship with her parents and with our kids. And in fact, there was a time where I actually led contemporary worship music in church, if you can believe that, because I like playing music. You know, that was sort of my personal driver. And it's moving, whether you believe the stuff or not, to be part of a group that's singing and together, like any concert, right? And in fact, I've been asked to perform at my wife's grandparents' funerals, both times Christian music, you know, Amazing Grace or whatever. And that was really rewarding for me to help the family in that way, in whatever capacity I could. So they certainly don't know where I stand, and I wouldn't use this as a platform. I think I worry that I might be put in an even more awkward position of being asked to do things or lead things, and we'll have to maybe politely decline if I feel like I'm being stepping too much out of who I am.
Well,
I don't think they would want that.
Look, if I may, you don't owe them an explanation as to why, if you decide you're not comfortable. You know, looking at your wife and you're looking at how much grief you want to bring down upon yourself. I mean, it's always my hope somebody's as open as they can be. But your cost benefit, that's your choice. But if you say, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that, you don't have to tell them why. You know, let them assume, or, you know, if they ping you with questions, you can decide to or to not answer. We'd like you to do a hymn, or we'd like you to pray before this part of the service. You can say, you know, I'm just not sure I'm the person for this. I'd feel more comfortable if someone else could do it. And that's all you can do. You don't have to spill out your entire value system, philosophy, lack of religion, etc. You don't even owe them that. So draw the boundary lines. And beyond that, I think it's very big of you to have stretched as far as you have to try to honor someone else's wishes. I think that's beautiful. I mean, I appreciate that.
Well, I really appreciate you, Seth. Thank you. I think you're one of the few channels that I think I listen to and watch 100% of your content. I can't even say that for Matt Dillahunty, as much as I enjoy his, for what he brings to the conversation, or anyone else for that matter. But for some reason, you find a way to cross the divide without creating a lot of enemies, and that's very hard to do.
I'm making that my ringtone. I'm going to call Matt and play it for him. Say, I don't listen to Matt all the time, but I listen to Seth all the time. That's my new ringtone, Paul. That's awesome. I'm going to use it. I'm going to turn that screw. All right. Well, you know, I hope it all works out. But don't forget that boundaries are important, and you can set them without apology. Okay.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate it.
All right. Catch you later. When my father's memorial service was planned, my overtly evangelical mother knows that I play a little bit of piano, and I grew up playing Christian songs. And she had asked me to play a couple of Dad's favorite hymns, or I don't think they were Dad's favorite hymns. He was hard of hearing. Like he had hearing aids and then cochlear implants, but I never heard him listen to music. I don't think these were Dad's favorite hymns. I think they were handpicked by my mother strategically to be placed in the service, and she wanted me, and she asked me, will you go and play hymns on stage during your dad's memorial service? And this is a setup, because she knows where I stand. Some people, I'm sure, said, well, it's really about your dad, and because you're a piano player, she thought it would be a nice fit. Don't even start. Knowing her, knowing the history, knowing what we've been up against, knowing all of the baggage, nah, this was strategic. She wanted to see a full-time atheist activist in public opposition to her religion stand on or sit on stage and play hymns in full view of everybody, and I politely said, no, thank you. I'm not comfortable with that. Perhaps there is a better way, or a more appropriate, or another way that I could lend a hand or support the endeavor. And that's exactly how I phrased it. And everybody kind of blushed, and they found another way to have special music, right? But hey, let's have Seth play the hymns. Boundary violation. I'm not comfortable. I'm going to draw the line. And I found a polite way to bow out. Do I think it's kind of shitty to use the death of my father to set me up like that? Yep. What makes it even more frustrating is I think she has kind of a plausible deniability model going on. You know, if I raise a hand and say that's just inappropriate and kind of shitty, then they can just look at me wide-eyed and say, well, I didn't mean anything by it. It's your father's favorite hymns, and you play piano, and after all, you are his son, right? It's one of those things where they can just slide. They can walk between the raindrops. You know, plausible deniability, that kind of thing. Sorry about the rant there. I just happened to look down at my phone, and there's a new entry in the family group text. And again, this is a family where they're passing COVID around like it's candy. This is from somebody on my immediate family tree. I'm now on day 13 of COVID. Ended up at urgent care last night because of high fever. Doctor said chest x-ray shows COVID viral pneumonia. I don't see any replies for prayers yet, but the day is young. Short break. I will be right back with more of your calls on whatever it is you want to talk about. Hang on. Thanks so much for being here today. It's an entire broadcast of listener calls, listener questions. This is just us talking today about whatever's on your mind. Cindy, talk to me. What's on your mind?
I have had something on my mind recently that is really bothering me, and I don't hear anybody else talking about it, and I can't understand why. Long story, I'm going to try to condense this. When I was 27 years old, I had two children and had three miscarriages, and I wanted to have my tubes tied, and I had to have my husband's permission, which at the time, it was in the 1980s. Okay, he signed. I got my tubes tied. No big deal. Fast forward 20 years. I worked with a girl who was single, turning 40. She never intended on getting married or having children. She went to a gynecologist to schedule an appointment to have her tubes tied at that point. And he refused to do it because she wasn't married, so she shouldn't have been having sex.
What state and what century is this? I can't imagine this is...
Pennsylvania, and this was, I think that was around 2001. So I was enraged, and I told her, find a different gynecologist, go somewhere else. Well, she did eventually find one who did a tubal for her. Now, fast forward another 20 years, I am currently living with my granddaughter, who is a recovering drug addict. She has two children, a five-year-old and a one-year-old. I am here to help her raise her children because she cannot do it on her own. When she had her second baby, she asked her doctors to tie her tubes, and they refused. They said she's not married and she's too young to make that decision. She's 26 years old. I was appalled at the time. I called my daughter, who is her mother, and she said, oh, don't even think about it. A friend of hers was over 35 years old, had two grown children, was never married, and she had a hard time finding a doctor to tie her tubes. So with all of this stuff going on, with bans on abortion and issues with birth control, why are we allowing male doctors to dictate when we can sterilize ourselves? And why isn't this issue being discussed?
Please forgive my ignorance on the subject. It's something that is not really my wheelhouse. All I can say is that your call has put it on the radar of a great many others who needed to be aware of it, and it's something we can certainly pursue and find out more and educate ourselves about. And I will defer to people who are more well-versed in this than me, but it sounds to me like another attack on reproductive autonomy. And so
precisely.
Let us, let us go down that rabbit hole and see what else we can discover, okay?
Very good. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks, Cindy.
All right. Have a good one.
You bet. While we're sort of on the subject of childbirth or reproductive choice, etc., did you see that story about Pope Francis? Pope Francis came forward and scolded couples who decided to have pets instead of children. No kidding. He said, "We are in the middle of a, quote, demographic winter, and people who decide to have pets instead of kids are being selfish and exhibiting a, quote, denial of fatherhood or motherhood that diminishes us. It takes away our humanity." How many children does Pope Francis have? What? A professed lifelong celibate with no children scolds people for having pets instead of children. Of course, the backlash was immediate. People are like, hey, what the hell? People were saying, get out of our bedrooms, get out of our lives. A few people asked if the Pope was going to pay their child care expenses. Anyway, that's been going on for, I think, at least a week. Tanika, did I get your name right? Hopefully I pronounced it right or got close.
Tarasca, yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. My auto screen had your name totally wrong.
It's Tarasca.
Tarasca. Well, that's unusual.
T-H-E-R-E-S-K-A.
What's on your mind, Tereska? What do you want to talk about?
Well, that whole tubal ligation thing really freaked me out. But because I had a doctor who told me that I needed to just pick any religion and my pain would go away from cancer. But I'm calling today because I'm worried that I am harming my son, who's 8, because I've raised him to ask questions. If he doesn't know, ask. If he's not sure, ask. And I try to tell him the truth, age appropriate, but we don't lie. He knows all the names for the body parts. He knows how things, you know what I mean? I just explain. He knows that adults can be wrong and that they lie and sometimes they're mistaken. A lot of parents don't like that. Well, his father's raised by atheists, and I personally have done my research and don't feel like it's a very compelling kind of argument. So we've been honest with him, but he's an immersive Mandarin student, and he's the only blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy there. And they do a lot of Christian activities. And so he's been asking me, because I've told him, listen, people who believe in a lot of things like the Bible or the Quran, they get very, very upset if you tend to push too hard about why they believe that way. And now he's coming home because he's having some, like, almost violence happening towards him, and he's not sure what to do. He's wondering, he said, why, Mom, are you telling me that I have to be respectful so that I don't offend them and I don't make them mad, is what he said, but they can make me mad all they want. They can say that I'm wrong and that I'm going to burn in hell and that I don't know what I'm talking about and I shouldn't be able to celebrate Christmas, like those kind of things. And, you know, and there's been, like, physical contact, and I don't like that. I'm one of those mothers.
Well, I think none of us.
What can I do?
You know, I'm not a professional in this regard. If an 8-year-old child is being accosted physically,
I
think, and what the authorities, the administrative staff, the teachers, whoever, are not intervening.
No,
I can only say if it was me and the staff wasn't responding to genuine concerns about harm being done, then I'm going over their head, which means I am publicly drawing attention to them, the specific actions, the altercations, the lack of intervention, whatever statement that may have been given to me by the school, that's going on social media. Perhaps I even contact the local media. Or if we're talking physical violence, that becomes even a law enforcement matter. You know, and I'm not telling you this is what you should do. But if I'm not getting results with the adults in the room who are supposed to be keeping order, then I think this is an alarm I would have to raise so that public pressures would begin to give me the results that I think are desperately needed, not just for my child, but for all the others as well.
He is in a Mandarin school, and with COVID happening and everything, they actually are facing their own type of violence because they're Chinese, is what people are saying in a terrible voice. And they are experiencing their own, like these children are experiencing, and their parents, their own type of violence. And I'm thinking that the children especially, they don't know what else to do. So like they're maybe a bit afraid and confused and they lash out. And the teachers who I did depend on, well, there's a new principal now and she seems to not be doing anything at all. When I mentioned that my child, I said, I walked right in front of her and I said, I am very, very tired of my child being hit or kicked in this school. If it happens again, I'm coming to your office to show you how hard it is.
So what you're saying is that it's a culture of people who have faced their own flavor of discrimination, which may inform their response to differences in their own tribe or in the proximity of their own tribe. Overall, it's a dysfunctional model for how to approach
and, and everyone in charge is Caucasian. So they don't want to offend the Mandarin family, which I understand. It's a very fine line to walk. I'm of mixed race myself. And so I understand that sometimes Caucasians are afraid to act a certain way or say certain things that need to be said. However, this wasn't an issue before COVID. I mean, small issue, but not really.
Is it a conversation that could be reversed where if you're addressing the principal, superintendent, teacher, and say, if it was this student and my son had come to your student and hit or kicked or blasted them for having a religious belief, do you feel that would be inappropriate? And when they say yes, you could say, well, if the reverse scenario takes place, do you also feel that's inappropriate? You know, it might resonate with them more if they feel it in their bones.
Exactly. And I appreciate you very much because I did do that at the beginning or at the end of last year when she came, the new principal. And she said everything you just said. Yes, of course, that would be a problem. We can't have, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what I found is kind of a turtling happening by everybody that should be doing something.
Are you saying that none of the other parents will ally with you in this?
None of the other parents are comfortable confronting teachers because that's not done culturally. Most of them are, in fact, Mandarin. They come from other parts of the city to even attend this program. And so in their culture, I talked to my son's tutor and everything about it. It's just not done. You do not question the teachers ever. They could smack the crap out of your kid, I was told. It's your kid's fault.
We're talking about assault. I'm not sure in what culture is that allowed or acceptable, and in what context does a parent say, that's something I'm going to abide. I can hear the voices of everybody listening as they're shouting, hell no, find another school, go public, go public, let everybody know it's a problem. I mean, it doesn't sound like they've made things easy for you, and it probably won't make the situation more palatable if you raise a very public alarm. But this kind of stuff only happens because it is allowed and abided. I also might consider contacting local journalists who might be interested in the fact that there were instances of physical contact, even violence against students who were not towing the line.
Yep.
And no culture excuses that. No tradition excuses that. That is what I would do. Only you can really decide your path forward, okay?
Thank you so much for helping.
I appreciate you calling. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. See you. What's that line about tradition? I mean, she was talking about cultures and how different cultures operate and what's expected. And there's this line that says tradition. Just because you've always done it that way doesn't mean it's not incredibly stupid. Katie, are you with me?
I am. How are you doing?
I'm good. What do you want to talk about today?
I wanted to get your take on the issue of magical thinking and how it often lingers even after people are no longer religious. For example, I myself, perhaps because this was very forbidden from me, I have found myself feeling very compelled and excited and interested by kind of the new age world of spirituality and even some of the sort of satanic imagery and all of those things and general paganism since I have freed myself from the bonds of Christianity. And I'm curious to know your take on that. Do you think that often that is a natural progression for people because they are so used to in their minds reverting back to the idea of a higher power that it becomes a lifelong crutch for them? Or do you think it's an okay thing to still dabble in?
Do you feel in your own life that drifting toward a more nebulous spirituality model is a crutch? I mean, you have guilt about it, or?
Not necessarily. I think it's just made me wonder if, you know, a lot of times ex-Christians end up going to that type of stuff because it follows some of the same thought patterns that they are used to. And I suppose I don't want to think that I've been so brainwashed that I still revert back to my old ways by being interested in paganism, if that makes any sense.
You know, as an ex-Christian, I don't see you as brainwashed in any way. You know, Christians, religious people in general, when they exit, deconstruct, their paths are so unique, as people are so unique. So I'm not going to make the blanket statement that Christians always do this. Some people become atheist in a day, you know, and some people take years. In my own perception, I have seen a lot of people move from the inner ring to the outer ring. So you're a fundamentalist, and maybe the Bible is partly metaphor, and then, well, maybe I don't hold to the Bible, but I believe in Jesus. It's not a religion, it's a relationship. And then you segue into a kind of deism. Well, I think there's a God or something, a master planner out there somewhere. And, you know, you end up in this spirituality membrane, and many people camp out there. But ultimately, if that stuff was true, if there was evidence for spirits, otherworldly plane, magic in some way, if I'm a rationalist, if I'm a skeptical thinker, I want to be testing and retesting and examining to see if there's anything to that. So no, I mean, I don't think you should punish yourself for being attracted to it, but I would encourage you to go beyond how it feels or what you want, what other people say is or isn't, and let's get into, well, is there any good reason to believe it? Because truth matters. That would be my only encouragement.
Right. Because I am very much a crystal collector. I almost buy too many of them on impulse. And I suppose I just don't want to think that I'm being duped by another industry that's out there trying to be like, oh yeah, this will help you, you know, do this and this, and it has these properties. You know what I mean?
Well, I already hear the skepticism and doubt in your voice. You're already sort of raising your own red flag, like this may be a scam, or this may be somebody who's making a buck, right? Whoever's in the crystals business, yeah, I might be subsidizing that. But let me flip that just a little bit. I am a huge believer in coloring the human experience. It's almost like practicing Jews who don't believe in God, but they surround themselves with the music, the clothing, the candles, the traditions, the bar mitzvah, etc., because they enjoy that window dressing on their lives. It's a useful way for them to express the human condition. And
right.
If in your life you want to color it with crystals and you like the imagery of certain mythologies and spirits and whatnot, you're doing it for the aesthetics, it brings you happiness. You don't have to buy into magic as quote-unquote truth to be able to enjoy magical accoutrements and fanciful stuff. You know, a lot of people, whether they enjoy paganism or whether they get into witchcraft or whether they like to do other types of things, people can choose how to decorate their lives. They choose, they can decide this makes me happy and they can do that. So I don't think you have to apologize for that.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I think there's a part of me that now really enjoys that freedom of, for example, being able to watch a movie that has satanic imagery and witchcraft and all of those things that when I was a teenager, I would have felt very guilty even for viewing that work of fiction coming from a perspective of people who were saying, oh yeah, the devil can use that to get inside of your mind. So I think now I enjoy just having that freedom to watch it and be like, this can't hurt me. I just find it compelling and there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
I think if it's interesting and compelling for you, I mean, if you were leaning over shiny crystals to treat COVID or cancer, I would be a lot more concerned. But if you are, I like them. They make me happy. I enjoy the traditions of it and the atmosphere of it while being aware that they probably aren't imbued with some sort of otherworldly power. And if that becomes apparent as a skeptic, I will test and retest to see if it's true. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. You know, live your life and decorate it however you want, okay?
Yeah, I'm definitely a fully vaccinated crystal user.
That's a t-shirt, fully vaccinated crystal user. Katie, I think life's one too more... short. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. I just wanted to ask you, I heard that the Free Thought Convention is coming to the Orlando area and that people like you and Matt Dillahunty and a few others are going to be guest speakers. And I've considered weighing my options about going with COVID and stuff like that. Is that an event you would recommend with things being as uncertain as they are right now?
I believe there is a vaccination requirement to attend, and I think that's responsible. I also am glad they're going to have the event. The Florida Freethought Convention at FreeFlow, F-L-O, freeflow.org, is probably... That and American Atheists are my two favorite events of the year, period. They are so much fun to do. If you get a chance to do a convention and it's free flow, you won the lottery because it's going to be a blast. I think if you can be there, I would encourage you to be there. And I'm looking forward to it myself, okay?
Yeah, awesome. I will definitely look into it.
Well, go enjoy your crystals, you know, fire up some incense, you know, play some Yanni music. I don't give a shit. Just, you know, live and be happy. Okay.
Okay.
All right. See you later. All right. Bye. You know, it's like people who enjoy the gods of mythology, and they wear the t-shirts and they've got the artwork in their houses and they enjoy, you know, all of these sort of decorative elements, and they enjoy the culture of it while being fully aware that God X, Y, and Z aren't rooted in reality. They are magical in kind of a fanciful way, you know, on the playground of the imagination. Well, that's part of the human experience. And if it rings your bell and you enjoy it, man, you don't have to apologize to anybody else for doing it. Just do it and enjoy it. Let me call it a show. And in the meantime, enjoy what you enjoy. Be who you are. Do what you do. On your own terms, for your own reasons, because there may be no tomorrow.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring The Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming Freethought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.